So this is now the Q&A period. So I actually, while you have that movie going, can I ask you a question about that movie?
Sure.
So this will just go on forever, basically. Like they're never going to merge because of the modes and the gas are kind of preventing them from doing so, or?
So the in the simulations, they'll never merge because the simulations happen on like a snapshot much shorter than sort of the secular evolution of the binary. But it actually depends on the gas properties. Sort of if you're if these black holes sort of are going to accrete from a disk around them that's hotter. That will lead to sort of heavy sort of a different type of flow that will that can drive the binary apart. But if it's accreting from sort of colder gas and a thinner disk, that can actually cause the binary to merge faster. And if we can understand this process better, that can help us sort of also figure out sort of what we expect the population of these things to be in the sky for potential LISA and PTA sources.
Cool, thanks. Other questions? Maybe while we're waiting for the hands to go up, I have a question for Jesse and then Shivadeep. What's your favorite extension of Lambda CDM and why?
I guess I'm partial to modified gravity models. Like I find sort of thinking about approaches to testing GR on astrophysical and cosmological scales pretty interesting, and also with a lot of challenges. So that's kind of definitely a pet interest of mine.
Yeah, from my side, I'd like to add, like, I think I'd like to see Lambda CDM plus neutrino mass. I want to get that model in picture now. Hopefully, it'll be coming soon.
Okay, very good. Okay, Latham, I think you had your hand up first. Please go ahead.
Sorry. This is also for Jesse and Suvadeep. So the Hubble tension, is that a real thing that I should be spending all my time on, or a systematic effect I should be spending none of my time on?
Who wants to take it first? Okay, go ahead. From my side, I don't think it's the tension we should believe too much before understanding the systematics. So I will put my money to understand the systematics at first, and I will look for independent measurements to make sure that there is truly a tension, and then spend my thoughts on theory.
Yeah, I think I would. I think I'm in agreement with Vidit there. It's definitely something that's interesting and something I'm keeping an eye on. But yeah, before I get too excited about theory modeling, especially when there's not, you know, one particular model extension that would explain it really simply and compellingly, definitely keeping an eye on the various calibration systematics and looking at complementary ways that people can measure that.
Okay, Simon.
I had a question for Jesse. You mentioned you had some work in progress on looking at samplers for parameter inference. Is there any kind of teaser you could give about the direction that work is going or the things you're looking at?
Yeah, so I mean, I will say that this is work I'm kind of playing a supportive role in rather than leading, but it came out of basically trying to figure out what sampler settings we should use for the main DES year three analysis. So we in particular work with nested samplers because we want to compute Bayesian evidences for model comparison. And sort of in previous rounds, we'd used one of these samplers called multi-nest that basically puts down ellipses in samples points and parameter spaces. We've since moved to one called polychord that has I don't know, a different way of selecting where points go. And we basically have convinced ourselves that Bayesian evidences computed from this pretty commonly used sampler multiness aren't that reliable, or you need to put it at such settings that it's just not that feasible once you start. Like it works fine for small numbers of parameters, but for like realistic cosmology analyses, we've got like six cosmology parameters and like 20 nuisance parameters. So we're in like a 30-dimensional parameter space. And sort of this commonly used sampler just kind of fails and actually biases the posteriors in ways that we've sort of tried to explore in a principled way. So That's a paper that we're hoping to have on the archive in like the next month or so. So watch that space.
Cool. Thanks.
Laurent?
I have a question for Sovelip. You mentioned that, you know, you have dark matters model like Axion or primary black hole, and then you run through simulation and prediction. So how far are we into predicting that, you know, it could be made of primordial black hole, for instance?
Primordial, so there are predictions for seeing primordial black hole signatures through gravitational waves. Major challenge is how do you distinguish primordial black holes? Because we see black holes and how we want to understand them. So there are a lot of theoretical studies being made about the merger rates of black holes and what fraction of them we can constrain from as dark matter. So our current measurements, we are if you take like monochromatic models of primordial black hole masses, you are able to constrain to something like about 1% or so in most of the bands. Some of the bands of like subsolar masses and like meteor mass black hole, primordial black holes are extremely low mass binary primordial black holes are still open, but solar mass primordial black holes and heavier are kind of getting constrained if you assume a particular mass profile. But then you end up in a problem in that if there is a truly a big, it is distributed along a mass spectrum, then there is a, still a room for 100% of the dark matter to be primordial black holes, and still we can measure it from data. Or one of the ways one can detect this is through gravitational waves and through seeing the how the mergers of the gravitational wave sources differs from what we can understand from astrophysical binary black holes.
Mm-hmm. And for Axion as a dark matter candidate?
Yeah, that is it's an interesting candidate. And one of the ways people want to measure it is through seeing the structure in small scales. You can, because axion or axion-like particles are going to wash out or suppress of some of the structures you see in the extremely small scales, which is not the case for cold dark matter. That gives a very distinct signature on the matter power spectrum. You may also have signatures of axion or axion-like particles on the radiation field of like cosmic microwave background. It's not required those axions to be dark matter, but at least you'll be able to find a signature of axion through cosmic microwave background because it can have an interaction with light in the presence of magnetic field. So these are the ways one can see dark matter as axion using cosmological probes.
Jesse, I wanted to ask you about your illustrations. So do you do these on the computer or you do them by hand or like how do you make those?
Generally on the Procreate app on the iPad. So that was one of my pandemic activities was learning how to draw on the iPad.
Cool. Yeah, that was a dangerous skill to advertise. Now they're going to ask you to beautify all the blackboards around PI with your illustrations.
The positive effect of the pandemic.
Any other questions from the audience? Okay, if not, then just announce that tomorrow at 11:30, we will be having another 1 hour session to hear from the rest of our cohort of new postdocs. And for those who are interested, let's meet outside PI around 4:30 and we'll enjoy, hopefully the sun shining still in and enjoy a little bit of fall colors and being outside. So thanks everyone for coming and hope to see you back here. It's a different Zoom link, so just watch out for that, but hope to see you at that new Zoom link tomorrow at 11:30.